Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host for Yoga Birth Babies. And today I have Paige Bellenbaum. She's the program director of the Motherhood Center here in New York City. And she's back with us. And I have a really important topic we are going to discuss. This is so important for postpartum doulas, for prenatal yoga teachers, baby and me yoga teachers, friends, family, lactation consultants, lactation counselors, anyone that is going to be working with the postpartum and perinatal and prenatal population. It is all about how to approach a person you suspect may be suffering from perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. What's appropriate to say? How do you approach them? What kind of help can you offer? So please enjoy this very important podcast. It was wonderful having another chance to talk with Paige. And before we jump into this again, just a reminder, if you're getting something out of this podcast and you want others to learn about the information you're listening to, please take a moment to go to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a rating and review. It helps others find this information because really it's about supporting and empowering other people. And again, if you have the means, I'm asking if you think about just the idea of possibly leaving a donation on our website, prenatalyogacenter.com. It helps keep the podcast going. All right, without further ado, let's talk to Paige. Welcome back, Paige. I am so excited to speak with you. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Deb. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm all set for our talk. I have my fresh cup of tea. I'm all ready. And I'm so excited because this is a really important topic we're going to talk about. And also, I love having guests back, especially you guys. You have so much information. So I love the Motherhood Center.
He's back. Thank you. We're so excited to have you guys offering your wares up here now.
I know. We're doing a little baby and me over there, a little plug for that class. All right. So some people may have not heard the past podcast. I don't know why they wouldn't have, but some people may have not. So let me just back up and ask you just to tell our community a little bit about yourself and what led you to your path at the Motherhood Center.
Sure. I am the very proud mother of a 12-year-old boy and a 9-year-old daughter who will be 10 actually in November. When my son was born 12 years ago, suffered from severe postpartum depression and anxiety. Even at the time, as a licensed clinical social worker whose primary job is to diagnose mental illness in other people, I was completely unable to diagnose myself. It went on for many, many months. It got more and more acute. I am lucky to be here today, as is my son. It got bad enough. I knew I needed to seek treatment and get help, which I did. And once I did get over the hump and start feeling better, more connected with my son, actually loving my son and being happy I had a son, I got really pissed. The more and more women I spoke to had similar stories, were still in those similar stories, and nobody was talking about it. There was very little treatment available for it at the time. So I ended up first working on public policy for New York State that requires screening for all new mothers to try to identify whether or not they have a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder, and also provide education to them before they leave the hospital. And it just, I even though I was doing other things professionally, it was an itch that I just, that kept having to scratch. And back in 2015, joined forces with Dr. Catherine Berndorf. And it took about 3 years to get the Motherhood Center from the seed of an idea to a bricks and mortar location. But we opened our doors in March of 2017. And since then have treated well over 1,000 women in the tri-state area that are struggling with and experiencing perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So it has been a 12-year dream to be able to get to this place where I can honestly say I went through something and I don't want other moms to have to go through it. And they don't have to because we now have a center to treat it.
It's so, so, so important. I literally got the chills when you said 1,000 women, because that's huge. And it's not even the tip of the iceberg of those that need it. So I'm so glad there's such place of the mother as the Motherhood Center. We'll talk more about other places that maybe people, other listeners might be able to find, but I'm really glad that's here. So I want to dive into our whole talk about, I never even did postpartum depression. Like, that's just the kind of an old term. So let's even start with that. So for years, postpartum depression was the common term used to describe kind of that postpartum mood issue. Can you talk a little bit about the newer terminology that encompasses prenatal and postnatal anxiety as well, and kind of why that change came about?
So every time I give the acronym or the full name of what we're calling it now, I always follow up with, also known as postpartum depression. So what we currently refer to when we talk about this range of symptoms and diagnoses is perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. That covers a spectrum of different diagnoses in the perinatal period. So we're talking from the moment of conception all the way to 1 year postpartum. That's the clinical definition. Although I know, and I'm sure you know, and listeners know, of women who are suffering from postpartum depression with a 3- and 4-year-old because it was never diagnosed or treated within the perinatal period. So perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, otherwise the acronym is PMADS, which not everybody likes, but it is what it is. It covers a whole number of different diagnoses. So depression, anxiety, OCD, bipolar, mania, postpartum psychosis. And what a lot of people don't know is that 50% of all PMADS develop during pregnancy. So the anxiety, the depression, it's very common for us to see those symptoms originate while a woman is pregnant. And then the other 50% originates in that postpartum period. So the onset, you know, what is kind of, there's many frustrating things about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, but it can be very difficult to determine the when they actually strike. Some women feel symptoms immediately. Some of them, it takes 3 to 6 months to develop. It's really hard to know when a woman's going to start feeling bad and manifesting symptoms. So historically, yes, most people have referred to the umbrella of disorders as postpartum depression. That's kind of the catch-all. But really, it happens in pregnancy, it happens postpartum, and it's a whole different set of diagnoses that can occur.
And it's not just depression, as you touched upon. It can be OCD, it can be anxiety. I think as a society, we in the past, we looked at it as like, oh, she's got the baby blues. So can you actually talk a little bit about the difference? Like, what's the baby blues? Where's that blurry that it then shifts into more of a serious situation?
So 80% of all new mothers develop the baby blues. And we like to look at that clearly indicated by a period of time, right? 2 weeks is the average amount of time that a new mom will experience the baby blues, typically in the immediate weeks after the baby is born. It's a very normal occurrence. We see a fluctuation in hormones, the sleep deprivation, the transition itself, the enormity of everything that's going on can cause women to feel weepy, irritable, can contribute to difficulty sleeping. These symptoms are more on the mild side. When we start to get concerned and think there might be something else at play is if these symptoms go on longer than 2 weeks and start to escalate. And so whereas being weepy, seeing a commercial that makes you cry or feeling a lot of different emotions, what we, beyond the 2 week mark, what we start to pay closer attention to and get more concerned about is if the first things we will always ask when a woman calls into the Motherhood Center, we do an intake on the phone, is how is your sleeping? How is your eating? If a woman is unable to sleep when the baby sleeps at night, she's so anxious, She just cannot sleep. That's always kind of strike one. If a woman's appetite has decreased, she's not eating, she has no interest in eating, that becomes strike two. So those are kind of two clear indications to us that something is not right. But there's a whole myriad of different of symptoms that we look for. Certainly, feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, feeling rageful, easily irritable and angry and very frustrated by people in your immediate circle and beyond, feeling incredibly overwhelmed. We see a lot of women have panic attacks. Their anxiety escalates. They're constantly worried about the baby. The baby's eating too much, not enough, sleeping too much, not enough, washing bottles religiously, pacing and not being able to sleep when the baby's sleeping. All of these things start to paint a picture for us that a mom is in distress. In the most acute situations, when a mom is experiencing an episode of mania or psychosis, those are the moments where we have to act incredibly quickly. And those types of symptoms and episodes require hospitalization. The other thing that we really need to talk a lot about, and we don't enough, is this whole concept of scary thoughts. So another thing we look for is women that are experiencing perinatal mood and anxiety disorders are oftentimes riddled by these scary, intrusive thoughts of harm coming to the baby, and also sometimes suicidal ideation or homicidal ideation of, thinking about either actively or passively wanting to end their own life. So that's kind of on the far end of the spectrum, but there are things we have to ask every single woman, because in this day and age that we live in, and we hear this over and over again, either in the day program or in outpatient therapy sessions, women are completely bombarded by this new social media norm where every picture of a new mom with a baby they see is smiling and happy, and she's her hair done and her makeup on, and the baby's smiling, and the family's on a vacation, everyone is in love with each other. And so mom with a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder is constantly comparing herself to this image she sees over and over and over and over again. And she's afraid to say anything. She's afraid of judgment. She feels guilty that she's not having that experience. And so this is a long-winded way of saying, even women who look like they have it all together, oftentimes those are the women that can be the illest and the sickest, because they're trying so hard to pretend like what's happening inside of them isn't happening.
That's huge. I'm so glad. I'm really glad you touched on the social media part. I could go on a whole rant about that. But these are real. I'm glad you described the symptoms. How common is this, the PMADs, or the PPA or the PPD? It's more common than we think, right?
It's really common. Statistics and research suggests that 1 in 5 women experience a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder in the perinatal period, so during pregnancy or postpartum. What that doesn't reflect is the more anecdotal number that those of us that are in this field know to be true. Those are the cases that come forward, right? For the very reason that I just stated, because of this guilt and shame that so many women feel for not loving this experience, not loving their baby unconditionally, not feeling like this is the best decision they've ever made in their life, but yet the worst. These women, because we still unfortunately have an enormous stigma around perinatal mental health, these women don't come forward. And so they struggle silently. So if you're to take that into consideration, it's more like 1 in 3. And this covers the spectrum, right? Like, we're talking from mild symptoms to acute, severe situations where women need to be hospitalized. But we have not figured out a way societally to pave the way for any kind of normalcy around maternal mental illness.
So that kind of leads into the whole reason I invited you back and that we reached out to you recently. So as a center that deals with pre and postnatal people, and many of our teachers are birth workers, I thought it was really important to have a protocol how to approach someone that we suspect has some problems, because we have had this. And most recently, there has been a case where it was very apparent. And having spoken with you and having researched this and, you know, been this world for a bit, myself and our manager, she and I had a talk because we were really seeing this and we're like, what do we do? How do we help this? What's our right? Like where do we even start? So when someone like a birth worker or a yoga teacher or just maybe even a friend, when we see these symptoms, what are some protocols you suggest for approaching the person in need?
Right. This is such an important question, and I'm so glad that you're taking it upon yourself to ask it. And we've been working very closely with the doula community, the lactation consultant community, really anybody who comes in contact with a pregnant or new mom, so that they have some level of efficacy and confidence to know what to look for, even without clinical training, and how to approach it and connect a woman to resources if she requires further treatment and support. So it can first of all, it can feel uncomfortable, right? And so often I think we, just as humans by our nature, kind of slink away from this type of thing because we're not sure, we don't want to embarrass someone, we don't want to make somebody feel defensive. So my first line of advice is normalize, right? And so as I start to work with these different organizations, doulas and what have you, is to really build awareness into any and all curriculum, right? So if you are running a class and there is conversation that happens, you're running a yoga class, are there opportunities to say, you know, we don't talk enough in the mother community about how common it is to actually feel really challenged by becoming a mom, right? Like, it doesn't always feel great. And sometimes it feels really bad. And it's so common for women to feel depressed and anxious, and some of these other things. And we just don't talk about it enough. You know, has anybody else experienced anything kind of similar to this? Or do you know anybody who had a really hard time? So starting to chisel away at the stigma, I think, is very helpful. It sets the stage moving forward then for people to be more comfortable and familiar with this being a safe space where people know they can talk about this. But like, if you're experiencing an individual who is manifesting some of the symptoms that I listed earlier or others, you know, I would have a side conversation and say, Sally, I just wanted to pull you aside and check in. How are things going? How has this transition been for you as a new mother? She could say, oh, it's great. Everything's fine. I love it. It's the best thing I ever did. That's one answer. Or, I'm so glad you asked. I'm really struggling through this. Well, Sally, I can't tell you how many times I've heard this from new moms. I really wish that it was easier for all of us to talk about, because this is the biggest transition we're ever going to experience in our life. And funny how you can have a car seat that gives you a manual of instructions, but when you have a baby, you have to figure it out on your own. And nobody tells you about the stuff that doesn't feel good. So if we can connect with Sally and normalize for her that this is actually a very common experience, and to take it, I'm going to do this trajectory first, and then I'll come back to the...
Oh good, because that's what I was going to say. I'm like, but what if you get the, it's all great, it's great, I love it, I love it. And you're like, I don't know.
But let's go there, right? So if Sally says, you know, oh, everything's fine, I love this, this is the greatest thing I ever did. Well, it's, you know, what do I want to say? I don't want to say it's good to hear you say that, but you know, I hear that a lot of times from moms where, they will claim or state that they're having a really easy time. I also hear it from a lot of moms frequently that it's, that they're having a challenging time and that this is actually really hard. And that a lot of times moms don't feel like they're given permission to talk about the hard parts of this transition. Has that ever happened? Do you ever met anybody who has had a less than ideal time? Sometimes that can get Sally to open up. If you're not getting anywhere, right, but you're really worried about Sally, then you can say, you know, Sally, I'm feeling a little concerned because it seems as though you're in distress, and I really want to figure out ways that myself, I can be more supportive and perhaps help you get some support to experience some relief, because this is such a hard time. And women can feel so much pressure to say that it's great and lovely and wonderful, and it's okay for it not to be. And so I just want you to know that I'm here for you, and I actually have some really great ideas and resources in the event that you ever feel that you want to explore them more, that can offer you the support and treatment that you need to feel better. The thing about this is we cannot force women into treatment, right? We cannot tell them. In certain situations, we can, if they're a threat to themselves or others. But we can educate, we can encourage, we can normalize, we can provide resources. So I feel like I've delivered this better other times.
No. It makes total sense.
Sally. Okay.
So that's Happy Sal. That's Sally saying all is great, super keen, and you're like, I'm not sure. So now what about Sally that's like, I can't even believe I got out of the house. I'm just so glad I got out, but this is just so hard.
Okay. Sally, I'm so glad to hear you say that. I've heard that many, many times from moms, and I'm so thankful that you feel safe enough to share that experience with me. You know, there are options out there. There are ways that you can feel better about this transition and that you can get the support you need to enjoy this more like you thought you were going to, more like you want to. Are you interested in getting some information? I actually know of a place here in Manhattan that specializes in helping women that are having a really overwhelming and challenging time transitioning to motherhood. I'm happy to even make the call with you. Do you want to sit down and make the call? Do you want to check out the website and see what they have to offer? Oftentimes women, even in doctor's offices, right, we do a lot of outreach to pediatricians and OBGYNs. It's one thing for a doctor to say, I'm concerned. I really think you need some support and treatment. Here's a card for the Motherhood Center. Call them. I'd say we'd be lucky to get 15% of those moms that actually call. It's that step, right? So if you're really worried about someone, I would say, let's call together. Let's call them. I hear it's a really easy process. All you have to do is call. They ask you a few questions, and then you can go in and they can get a better sense of what's going on. And what I always like to say, and I feel like is the key to this, is that treatment works, right? And Dr. Berndorf and I will always say, I've never not seen a mom get better, which is a lot of double negatives, but everybody feels better and gets better with treatment. And they're actually learn how to enjoy this in the way that they saw a mom on a Pampers box. Maybe not entirely. I think that doesn't exist anyway.
That's all airbrushed.
But just to have a little tinge of that feeling that they so desperately want.
So I want to go a little bit deeper. So on our intake form, we have an emergency contact. Now, the bigger picture here, again, where I stand, not as the birth worker, just as the teacher and the observer, I don't have usually a very close relationship. So I could definitely say and prod with some of the questions. Is it ever, ever appropriate if you go for those questions, you pull Sally aside, you try to see, and you're just getting a blank wall? Is it ever appropriate? Because again, we don't know the relationship with her emergency contact or her partner, her home life. Is it ever appropriate to reach out if you're really concerned, either or her care provider?
So I know this is a dicey question, and obviously we do it all the time here because it's what we're trained and authorized to do.
But we're not.
So, I mean, there are certain symptoms that I would say require not only a contact to their emergency contact, but to 911. If a mother is delusional, if she's hallucinating, if she's having visual or auditory hallucinations, if she has, you know, if she is has very confused thoughts, if she's not making sense when she's talking, if she is telling you that she's going to kill herself or the baby, like these are very
big,
obvious actions and symptoms that require an immediate call to 911. So if you're seeing these types of behaviors, absolutely. I just to be safe, and you're absolutely right. Like, you don't know the relationship that that woman in front of you has with her partner. There might be DV. Like, you have no way of knowing. I would err on the side of caution and say, I am, you know, I as I've explained to you today, I'm really concerned. I really want to help you get some help. I'd really like to reach out to your partner or this contact or a friend and just let them know that we had this conversation. I think it's important. Do I have your permission to do so? Now, if she says no, you know,
we have to honor that.
You have to honor that. But if nothing else, even if she says no, you've planted the seed, right? She knows that you're concerned about her, she can trust you, that you're there for her. And sometimes it takes a little reflection on her part then to go home and spend a night or two thinking about, wow, like what she said really sunk in. You know, like, I feel terrible. I don't want to feel this way anymore. Like, maybe I should try something else, because she might not have known before how common this was or how treatable this is. So, to protect yourself, I think unless you are seeing it is clearly a crisis situation, you should ask for permission.
Has it ever happened where someone brings it to someone's attention? So say I have a student, we're going back to Sally, and I pull Sally aside and I'm just checking, how are you? I'm a little concerned. Some of the things we've heard you say or seen or do just make me want to reflect on checking in. Has it ever been where the person didn't even realize they were beyond the norm?
I think so, right? And this is where I hear this a lot, where women are like, what's normal, right?
Yeah.
Like, no, if this is like the normal anxiety that comes with being a parent, or if this is something more. So if the symptoms are causing a mom marked distress, if they are getting in the way of her ability to care for herself or the baby or make it through the day, if they are, you know, like if they are taking up an enormous amount of mom's time and energy, then that's a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
Then that is something that we can help her get relief around.
Yeah, because she may not even realize, like you mentioned those things, you're like tired and rageful. I'm like, I'm often tired. And if I'm pushed hard enough, I get a little rageful. Like, you know, I think we all can relate. So I guess it's then the mirror back saying, you know, as an outsider, I'm seeing this beyond the norm. Because yes, Sally may not even have known.
She might not even know.
Yeah.
She might not even know. And it might actually be a relief to her to have somebody say, this is what I'm noticing. And the good news is we can do something about it, right? Like, there are ways that you can get relief and not feel so bogged down by these scary thoughts or the need to follow your schedule so that you're breastfeeding every 2 hours and you're writing down how many ounces and every minute, right? Like, you know, it also gets compounded and confusing by like these apps and things we have.
I was just like, thinking that. Oh my God.
Back when I was nursing my son 12 years ago, like these apps didn't exist, but I did have a couple of friends who would like literally had a handwritten manual that would write down when the baby started, when the baby ended on each, like, and I was like, and even with my depression and anxiety, I thought that was excessive. I was like, oh my God, how do you even have the wherewithal to do that? But now these apps like sleep and
I think
eat
it's actually too much. If I'm going to just interject my own, you know, I'm old fashioned. I'm in my 40s, you know, but my daughter's 4, my son's 7. So it hasn't been that long ago, but it seems overwhelming. Like you can kind of figure out which boob they were last on. You glance at the clock. I think it's putting a lot of pressure for perfectionism and actually creating more anxiety.
Absolutely it is. And you know, it's interesting, since we opened, especially being located in a place like New York City, where you have a very large pool of very professional, established women who have gotten to this point in their career because they do have that kind of type A controlling personality, which has served them so incredibly well in the workplace, and they can manage 150 people and have a multitasking list, you know, of 50 things every day and get them all done. But then they have a baby and they think, I've heard so many moms say to me, you know, I thought that all of my stellar abilities as a professional were going to lend themselves so well to becoming a mother, and exactly the opposite happened. They have made me feel as though I'm in a deficit, because you cannot control a baby, right? Like, you cannot make a list of things that you want your 12-week-old to do that he or she is going to do. throughout the day, right? And so it can be really hard for women who are used to kind of being in control of situations. It's like having the rug ripped out from under you, right? Like, and something I like to tell my moms, the key word over and over again is surrender, right? Like, I give you permission to surrender. You cannot control this. You cannot tell a baby when to eat or sleep. We have to surrender and give ourselves to the experience because we can't change it. We can't do anything about it. We can work on accepting it.
Yeah, that is a major theme throughout most of our prenatal classes. And people laugh because we talk about surrendering to labor because it's only so much you can steer that wild river. And then they often laugh and I'm like, and you have to surrender to motherhood. It's going to have its ups and downs and its good feelings, its bad feelings. And control is something that we need to let go of. We can have kind of a general idea, but you know, your baby's a person and a person in a different mindset than an adult that you're having a conversation with. So yeah, surrender is a major theme. So I'm glad that we're on board with that.
Yeah.
So is there anything that I have not asked you about that you feel is important to know about supporting a person with PPA or NPPD?
I mean, I guess I would just say, you know, other things that will come out that I think women feel so much guilt and shame about is not feeling this immediate unconditional love for their baby, right? Like, there, you know, there's this fantasy that you have the baby, it's put on your chest, and you're like, oh my God, this is ethereal. And not only does that rarely happen, but it takes time to develop a relationship with your baby, let alone anybody. Like, for those of us who had to go out on multiple dates with our partners to decide whether or not we really like them, like, you don't automatically fall in love with people. That's just not, it's not normal. And so to give women permission to take time to get to know this person, and yes, they're a baby and they're lovely. And also, guess what, little baby? You took my life away from me. Like, I'm also mad at you, right? Like, I used to go out with my friends and have drinks and I used to do this and that. And now I stare at your butt all day and feed you from my boob and I don't sleep. Like, I don't like you very much. And that's okay, right? Like, the ambivalence, we have to make room for ambivalence. Having a baby, becoming a mother is not black and white. It's so filled with gray. And so, you know, when we're talking about this fragile population, again, giving them permission to have this whole range of emotions can feel like such a relief, right? Like, oh, so I don't have to love my baby from day one. Oh, so I don't have to nurse my baby like every 2 hours on the moment, like, or, oh, I can be mad because my whole life has changed and I feel like I made a big mistake. Yes, you can have all those feelings and it's okay. And maybe 1 or 2 days a week, you might like your baby or you might like your husband again. And that's okay too, right? Like, it's all okay. I think really takes the weight off the shoulders of someone, especially who's really struggling with this, to know that it's okay. And I'm always very careful to not say to a new mom who's suffering from depression or anxiety that this is normal, because it's not normal. It's common. This is a common phenomenon. It happens to so many women all the time. And I think that in itself, just letting people know that they're not alone is huge.
This is fantastic. And I'm going to make sure, actually, I'm going to include this in our teacher training now, because I think it's something that teachers that are working with this population need to be armed with the information. Yep. Because I have seen this for years and I've always struggled with how do I approach it. And it wasn't until recently that I'm like, I need better tools, because we had someone that was, it was big, shiny flashing lights needed help. So I think this was timely and I'm so appreciative. So we talked about the Motherhood Center. Do you know of other places around or other resources or even website or hotlines? If yep. someone's in need, where do they go?
So we work very closely with Postpartum Support International. They are an international organization that provides resources and referrals to women all across the globe. They have chapters set up and coordinators in every state and city throughout the U.S. And their website is www.postpartum.net. They have a map you can click on your zip code or where you live, and they'll provide you with a full list of therapists, reproductive psychiatrists, support groups, all for women that are struggling with perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So they are really the premier referral service for moms that might be listening to this anywhere.
We will put that on our website, on the show notes. And one more time, where can people find the work you do?
So we are at the Motherhood Center. We're here in Manhattan. We're at www.themotherhoodcenter.com. Moms can call us at 212-335-0034. And it's a quick intake. We just get a sense of what the symptoms are. We try to get moms in here within 48 hours for an evaluation. We really try not to turn anybody away. There's nowhere else to go for these multiple tiers of treatment and service. So if you or someone you know is experiencing any of the symptoms I listed in the beginning, we're here.
It's so important. I'm so, so thankful to have this chance to speak with you and for our community to hear this and for the yoga teachers out there and the doulas and lactation consultants or counselors, this information, and for friends and family, this is vital. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I just would say, and I did a training for a group of postpartum doulas, don't be afraid to ask the question.
Yes. Don't be afraid. They'll be more upset if you didn't.
Exactly.
Thank you, Paige.
You're welcome.
All right, take care.
Okay. Thanks, Deb. Bye.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.